Hi, I'm Monica Hallan, and this is my podcast, Let's Talk Money. Every Friday, a new episode will drop that gives you a snapshot analysis of one money-related topic that has meaning in your life. And then I answer your money questions. My hope is to put you on the path to financial stability and freedom. So, let's talk money. Come January, and the expectation of the budget exercise begins to warm up. Budget 2024 will be a vote on account and not a full budget, as India goes into a general election. But I'm going to take this opportunity to talk to you about this annual event that generates so much interest in all our lives. It is such a big media event. The newspapers next day are so thick and so full of that event. What is it all about? Welcome to this special episode, where I decode the union budget. What is it and why does it matter to us as citizens, and why should it matter to us?
So let's begin with a basic explanation. Can you tell us what exactly is the union budget?
That's a very good question to ask. You know, how we earn and spend our money defines the stability of our household budgets. The way we grow our incomes, keep expenses in check, and build appreciating assets will define our success as wealth-creating households. The government budgets are not that different. Now, if we look at the union budget as being somewhat similar, not exactly, but somewhat similar to a domestic budget, then we see that the household income, in the form of salaries or business income, is somewhat similar to tax revenues of the government. So the government earns its money through revenues, and both the government and a household will spend on current consumption and also to build future assets. Any mismatch between the two, which is income and expenditure, leads the house to the bank to borrow money to bridge this income expenditure gap. Now, this is where the government and the household budgets differ, because the government can do exactly the same. It can also borrow money. The difference is in the ability of the government to go on borrowing and to print money when it cannot borrow anymore, when it needs to bridge this gap between spending and revenue. So, in short, the budget is the annual statement of how the government gets its revenue and how it spends it. The difference between revenue and expenditure is the deficit. So when somebody uses the word deficit, don't get scared of jargon. It is just the excess of expenditure over revenue.
But not all deficits are bad. For example, if I take out a home loan and build a house, I do it because I can't afford to put the cash down right now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, not all borrowing is bad. Look at us. When we take a home loan to build a capital asset, like a house, what we are doing is we are essentially using tomorrow's income today. The quantum of loan we take reflects our confidence in the ability to go on earning for the next 15 to 30 years an increasing amount of income. The government is no different. It borrows to both fund current spends and to build capital goods for the country in the form of infrastructure, roads, ports, bridges, highways. And remember that 1 rupee of capital expenditure creates a multiplier of 3 rupees. It's good for the economy. It creates infrastructure, jobs, and future growth. But if there's a large deficit and very little capital expenditure, it means that the government is taking on debt to spend on current consumption. And what might that be? Subsidies, freebies, loan waivers. And this does not bode well for the economy. You know, it's like using your credit card for dinner without having the means to pay for it. But if the capital expenditure is high, then the government is spending on infrastructure. And that is good because it sets off a growth cycle that helps boost the level of economic activity in the country. But what if a household is unable to stretch current income to cover consumption expenditure month on month? The household would initially use a high-cost credit card and then convert maybe to a personal loan. These are high-cost loans and they don't build assets and are frowned upon as financially being imprudent. The government does something similar. when it borrows to finance current expenditure over current income. This is called a revenue deficit. You will hear this term all the time during the budget months. But revenue deficit is simply the excess of current expenditure over current income. And there is a way to understand this. The financially prudent number of this kind of deficit, which is the revenue deficit, is zero. One formula says that if the revenue deficit is zero, then a fiscal deficit of 3% is said to be good for the country. So if your deficit is 3% with the revenue deficit being zero, that is good for the country because this 3% is going towards mainly capital expenditure. What you must know is the Indian government has been committed to keep deficits in check, though the COVID period has got us a bit off track. Usually large deficits are frowned upon, largely because apart from being a sign of a spendthrift government, it also means that when the government borrows to fill this gap, it'll crowd out private investment and raise interest rates. However, in special circumstances, a deficit may be the only way to dig a nation out of a slowdown or a recession. We are nowhere near either a slowdown or a recession. So we should, in this budget, see conservative deficit numbers. So let's wrap this. How a government earns and how it spends and for what it borrows are questions we as taxpayers must ask.
So I'm curious, how does our government actually spend its money? What does India spend on?
It's very important for us as taxpayers to know what the government is spending its money on. Unfortunately, a fifth of the entire budget goes towards interest payments for past loans. This is a big number. And India needs to be careful that unless we keep growing and increasing the pie, increasing the revenue, the interest burden can become too large and get us into a debt trap. 8% of the budget goes towards defense, 7% goes towards subsidy commitments, and 4% to pensions. While defense is a strategic cost, India needs to keep the subsidy and pension commitments under check, or we will be where countries in Europe find themselves today, with an unsustainable pension burden. That is why I believe that the return in some states of India to the old pension scheme is so worrying. It puts pressure on already fragile state budgets and takes a U-turn on a very hard-fought reform. I find it very surprising that a party that promises a return to the old pension scheme is voted into power because the benefit actually flows to a very small, creamy layer of government servants rather than the whole population. Anyhow, the pension story is a full episode in the coming week, so look out for it. Next, education and health account for less than 4% together. Now, this does sound very less. But remember that both education and health are state subjects, and they have to spend on this from their budget. How do the states get their money? They have their own sources of revenue. Plus, the goods and services tax, the GST revenue, is shared with the states usually in a 50-50 ratio, although there are exceptions. Railways gets about 7% of the budget. Budget 2023 took a giant leap and increased capital expenditure to 22% of the total expenditure, which has been really good for the economy. As the numbers tell you, we need to be very careful about the non-strategic and legacy payments such as interest, subsidies, pensions, so as not to derail the budget in the future.
So I do know what taxes are, and they truly hurt the deepest parts of my soul. But can you tell me what role taxes play in the budget? Because I gotta tell you, Annika, either they're going up and up or getting more convoluted by the day.
Yeah, that's a heartfelt question. And it really bothers all of us taxpaying people that we tend to get no relief. But let's understand the system a bit. The government gets its revenue from both tax and non-tax sources. Taxes are levied on both individuals and companies. There are two kinds of taxes. There's direct tax and there's indirect tax. We are most familiar with direct taxes because these are taxes on us as individuals and on the companies that we run. We pay tax on salaries, on any rent or interest or profit that we make. So we are paying taxes both on income and on the returns on investments. Companies also pay taxes to the government on profits earned. But did you know that both income tax and corporation tax are 15% of the budget each? We think our income tax holds up the entire budget. It does not. Another source of revenue for the government is indirect taxes. These now come through the route of GST, or the Goods and Services Tax. The GST is now becoming an important source of revenue for the government and is contributing 17% of the budget. Customs and excise is out of the GST. Customs is giving 4%, excise 7%. So we've understood that there's tax revenue of the government and then there is non-tax revenue. Non-tax revenue comes to the government as income and profit flow from the government-owned companies, PSUs they are called, like banks, LIC. About 60% of the revenue comes from taxes and one-fifth comes from the non-tax revenue. 34% of the budget is borrowing. Okay, as much as 34% of the Indian budget is money borrowed. Now let's come to how we are taxed, and that's something we are familiar with. We have what is called a progressive tax system. We are taxed an increasing tax rate as the income slab rises. Most people listening to this podcast will come in the 30% tax bracket. You must know that India taxes its super rich at very high tax rates of over 40%. This is the way that a government tries to redistribute from the rich to the poor by taxing the super rich very high and then redistributing the money to the poor. Remember, we also get taxed on our consumption through the GST. And you know, if you make a rough estimate, if you add together direct and indirect taxes, what we pay on our salaries, on our investment income, and on the consumption basket through the GST, we fork over between 35 to 40% of our incomes to the government every year. So you work for 4 months for the government and just 8 months for yourself. So you need to hold both the government accountable and yourself accountable. Government on how it spends the tax money that you give it, and yourself, because you have given a large part of your money to the government, and what is left, you have to be very careful on how you spend, how you save, and how you invest it.
So I've heard of something called off-budget items. What are they and why are they bad?
Yeah, this is a story of past budgets. It's not a good story, but let's tell it. Okay, look, governments like to show lower expenditure so that their deficit number is lower. So when the announcements are made in parliament, they want not to announce a large deficit number because it affects things like the credit ratings of the country and the overall investment climate. So over time, and especially in UPA 2, the government resorted to hiding its actual spends. And this is how it was done. To show lower expenditure, the government moved some of its borrowing to borrowing by companies which are owned by the government. For example, the Food Corporation of India is mandated to buy grain from farmers at the minimum support price. We know that. But this grain is either sometimes given away free or sometimes sold at a loss. So Food Corporation of India, for example, will have a mismatch in its income and its expenditure. To make good this difference, it will borrow from the market. Now, instead of the government borrowing the money, it tells FCI to borrow and does not include that in the total borrowing number of the government. Similarly, for other organizations like, for example, Power Grid Corporation, which did the same. Hiding borrowings in this manner gives a very misleading picture to the true deficit number. And if a country's data is suspect, it'll find it difficult to attract foreign capital and investments. But, you know, there is some good news. In the last two budgets, we have seen the government deal with this issue. In fact, it was 2 years ago when the off-budget items were brought on the budget. So now, when we see the deficit number, we know that it is true and we can trust it. The budget numbers are reflective of the true expenditure, and this is good news.
Maybe it's the Sagittarian in me, but one thing I'm particularly interested in is what is the larger story that's embedded in the budget?
Oh, I love this question because everyone focuses on taxes and what they get out of the budget. But you know what? It's not just an announcement on taxes and expenditure. The budget speech is used to give major economic and political signals of the ruling party. The policy direction of the government is articulated and supported by the manner of receipts and expenditures. For example, if you commit in the new year to spend less on eating out, won't you articulate it as a goal and say, you will spend less than 2% of your monthly income on eating out? This will translate into a spending limit that you hope to follow. Similarly, governments lay down big, broad policy directions of the economy and the path it hopes to follow. I'm going to give you a few examples. You know, the 1991 budget speech was seminal. It was used by the then finance minister, Manmohan Singh, to very softly announce the big changes in the industrial policy document, which was placed in the parliament earlier in the day. This had a big impact in India and it unleashed growth. The big announcement were made in the industrial policy, but it was just mentioned in the budget. This was done because India then, remember, was a socialist country, and to openly announce opening up would have caused mayhem in the parliament. Yet the budget speech was used to announce the liberalization, which has changed all our lives. However, the same government before the 2009 election in budget 2008 announced a 60,000 crore farm loan waiver, and they increased that by 20% mid-year. The Congress won the 2009 election, but the country's finances lost. Our public finances were a mess. And remember, when the government spends too much on freebies, it results in inflation. By 2010, inflation was raging at 12%. In a pre-election year, to give handouts as a way to bribe voters is the worst political behavior for any party. The post-2020 budgets have displayed an increasing confidence about moving away from poverty towards becoming a middle-income country. The budget announcements have also spoken about reducing the role of the government. The policy statement clearly says over and over again that we are no longer a socialist economy and that business must be left in the more efficient hands of the private sector, that profit is no longer a dirty word. There is no confusion between empowerment and entitlement. From a Mai Baap government to an enabler government has been the shift that I have noticed in the budget statements over the past few years, and I have tracked the budget for over two decades. The budget exercise is an opportunity for the ruling government to lay out its priorities and display financial prudence. Just as your and my future life depends on financial decisions we take today, so it is for India. As you listen to the budget speeches this year and in the years ahead, I hope you decode the larger story of policy statements and the direction the country is being led towards, and not just focus on taxes and the small announcements that are directly relevant to us. I really hope this talk has helped you think about the budget beyond the media hype and you understand it just a bit better. And that's a wrap for today. I enjoy answering your money questions. Remember, I don't look at individual portfolios. I don't recommend products. Look upon this space as a place to ask strategy questions, doubts, and just basic things that you might not understand. Each time you have a good money outcome, I feel that I have won. To make sure that you don't miss an episode, press follow and help your friends get money smart by sharing a link with them. You can reach out to me at mailme@monicahullin.com. That's Monica with a K. Tag my social media handles @MonicaHullin. And finally, remember that you should have money and money should not have you. So let's talk money again soon. Bye.
Let's Talk Money is hosted by Monica Hullin. This is a Made in India production. Creative Director, May Mariam Thomas. Project Manager, Sean Phantom. Head of Audio Production, Karthik Kulkarni. Producer, Meghna Gulati. Sound Editor, Lakshman Parasuram. Artwork Design by Alika Gupta.